It's Wednesday, May 9th on The Monty Show. I'm Monty, that's Jake. Hey, Jake.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, big day in the NBA, as we seemingly say every day. Game 5, Philly and Boston is tonight. We've got to talk a lot about the, is it orgasmic revelations that are the Western Conference Finals?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry, the NBA Finals start, I think, on Monday in Houston.
Yeah, it's Monday, yeah.
Right?
Yep. Yeah.
Because from what I understand, the Rockets and Warriors, that's the NBA Finals. Whatever happens in the East is irrelevant.
Yeah, pretty much.
Bitter, party of one. Bitter, party of one. Anyway, we got to get to that. We've got to get to Shaq and Charles Barkley on TNT last night. Absolutely going ham on each other. You'll hear that. The Padres are going ham on their manager, allegedly. Guess what, Jake? Wait, let me turn the music off. Guess what?
Yeah.
I have big news for you, Giant fan.
Okay.
Yasiel Puig is back.
Yes.
Life is good.
My life is complete.
Well, that's because the Dodgers are 9 out and they play the Diamondbacks again tonight. So Wood and your boy Patrick Corbin. Mm-hmm. Corby, the lefty.
Yeah, Corby.
Corby. We'll talk about that. The Boy Scouts and the Mormons got divorced, so we got to talk about that. Hey, who the is Tom Brady?
Who?
Somebody asked that question. A very prominent, famous athlete asked the question, who the is Tom Brady? It's a relevant question if you ask me.
It's fair.
Yeah. You know, so we'll talk about that. I'm going to do a 24-hour fast where I'm only going to drink water. Why do you laugh? Why do you laugh at me?
It just sounds like initially it sounds dumb, and then you go into all these good reasons like why it's good not to indulge for 24 hours. And I'm just like, come on, dude.
Yeah, well, I'm telling you, that's what needs to be done is what needs to be done. Are you going to man up and do it with me?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll talk about that coming up because there's no chance Jake is doing that. Boom, pizza. Hey, what's your favorite food? Pizza. What's for breakfast? Why don't we have scrambled eggs on pizza? What about dinner? You know, I think we'll have leg of lamb on pizza. That's your answer to it. Well, that or pasta.
Yeah.
You would have pasta every day if it was possible.
Yeah, probably.
All right. Rockets and Warriors, Boston and Philly, Philadelphia. Game 5 tonight in Boston. The Celtics are a 1-point favorite in this game. How important is it that the Celtics close this out? I think it's vital. They have to win tonight or this series is going to go nip and tuck the rest of the way.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely one of those games where if you don't win this game, you're in big trouble the rest of the way, in my opinion, because if the Sixers win this game, now all of a sudden we're on the comeback trail. You know, everybody's excited. They have that momentum heading into game 6. You know, and of course, if they were to win that, it would come back to Boston for, you know, an iconic, essentially, game 7. You don't ever want to get there. You need to win tonight. You need to send the sophomore of the year home and, you know, just have move on to face LeBron.
The sophomore of the year. I like it. But I don't like the oddity of what the Sixers are doing with their lineup. Brett Brown's a good coach. This lineup is odd. I would love to see him get Markelle Fultz involved in this series somehow. Because they lack a little bit of oomph. If J.J. Redick comes out and scores for you and plays well, okay, everything's good. But when J.J. Redick doesn't score well, you know, or he doesn't, you know, I don't even know the right way to say it. When he's not his level best,
yeah,
there's something odd about who this team becomes. I don't know what the right way to say that is, but essentially, I'm telling you, it gets weird when Redick doesn't play well for them. It gets really odd.
Yeah, I mean, he is that guy that can really put them over the top if he's playing well, or, you know, on the flip side, if he's not playing well, they really suffer. And that's why I think, you know, Ben Simmons tonight is really going to have to come out and impose his will. You know, he needs to score early. He needs to really get his teammates involved, and they need to get into the offensive flow early and often. They need to get out in front of the Celtics early.
Yeah, but the odd thing, not to go back to J.J. Redick, but he played his worst game in the game that they won. He shot 1-7, and he just is that glue guy. And the reason I bring Markelle Fultz up is that I feel like he can really contribute to them. when J.J. Redick isn't playing well, because you don't need 25 minutes from Markelle Fultz.
Yeah.
You just need a solid 12 minutes off the bench.
Yeah.
But they're not doing that. And I think this is the thing that got Toronto in trouble in that Cleveland series. You changed how you got here. And I think you have to be really careful with that, but you also can't be scared to work in a guy like Fultz, who was good the last couple of weeks of the season. Just because he wasn't there all year doesn't mean you can't play him now.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's what Quinn Snyder did with the Jazz, playing Raul Neto, right? I mean, that's a guy
who Alec Burks.
Alec Burks. I mean, yeah. Those guys don't play much on that team, and, you know, Quinn Snyder found a way to work them in and get positive contributions from them. I agree that Fultz, it would be nice to give Fultz, you know, 10, 12 minutes and see how he does, but the problem is you should have been doing that in game one and game two, right? Like, you should have been, you know, finding where you could, you know, pepper him in. And at this point, you know, this is not a game where you can fool around and experiment. You have to win the rest of the games in this series to have to move on. And so I don't know. I think, you know, Brett Brown is going to have to figure out if he's willing to take a chance on Markelle Fultz. Because, again, Fultz hasn't been here either. This is his first go around.
Correct.
I mean, this is the first time he's ever been in these moments. So I just think Fultz, yes, I'd love to see him get out there. I don't think he gets out there.
Yeah, and I don't think you get better by sitting on the bench in the playoffs.
No.
I really don't. But I think that's one thing. My bigger question is, why are the Sixers not better defensively against a team in Boston that, frankly, goes through really awkward stretches? When Tatum's out of the game, they don't have a real surefire way to score the ball.
Yeah.
You know, Jaylen's not playing 100% right now. He's like 70%.
Yeah.
And their games are still really close. Now, the last game in Philly, obviously, they controlled that down the stretch. But this has been Boston's series. And I'm curious how this goes at home tonight and exactly how this turns out. I don't have a lot of confidence in the statement that Boston's a better team than Philadelphia, because I don't believe they are.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're head and shoulders a better team. Have they been the better team? Sure. They're not an outright better team, though, right? Like, the Sixers should have won this series. I mean, what have we been talking about for months now with the Celtics? We thought, you know, the Celtics were, you know, going out in the first round, and, like, they weren't going to be very good. And
no stars, they're
no
all
stars.
Hurt.
Like, that was kind of the story we were referring to, and now we're at a point where, you know, they're in game five against a Sixers team who is very young, more talented than they are, but somehow just can't quite put it together.
So what do you attribute that to?
I attribute it to, I think, you know, the Ben Simmons not being able to shoot thing gets him in awkward situations a lot of times.
Well, because they're doubling him. See, they're doing, again, not to keep banging Toronto, but they're doing what Toronto refused to do. They're taking the ball out of Ben Simmons' hands like Toronto should have done with LeBron James and refused to do that.
Do you think it's possible to take the ball out of LeBron James' hands in that same way that they should do to Ben Simmons?
Yeah, I would make Kyle Korver beat me on that team. I'd make if J.R. Smith wants to shoot, you know, 7 of 10 from 3, oh well. I'm not letting LeBron James dunk on people.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there is this idea that a guy like Ben Simmons is not getting a free dunk in this series.
Yeah.
He shoots 78% inside of 7 feet. You realize how crazy that number is?
Well, yeah.
He shoots in the 90s inside of the restricted area. So when he's got a layup or a dunk, he's shooting like 90%.
Yeah.
You got to foul that guy.
Yeah.
They have been doing that. They've been bodying him. They have not been allowing him to what they call establish. They've not been allowing him to establish with good position. So when he goes to post up, they've been pushing him out. And I think that's what you have to do.
You have to.
And then the sag, this is really what's been letting Philly down too, is that the Covingtons of the world, the Bellinellis of the world, the J.J. Redicks of the world, that kickout shot is not going down. So they're not making that, hey, Ben Simmons, double team, kick it out, drop the three down. They're not making that three-pointer.
Yeah.
And I think that's been a huge part of Boston's success because nobody else was able to do that to Ben Simmons. But coach of the year should have been Brad Stevens, although NBA coaches didn't give him a single vote. They voted Dwayne Casey in Toronto the coach of the year, which he probably earned it, by the way. But Brad Stevens is a really good, you know, schematic X and O. What are they trying to do to us offensively, coach?
Yeah.
He understands that the ball cannot finish with Ben Simmons. You've got to make Ben Simmons pass that ball. Give it up.
Yeah.
And they've been doing a really good job of that. So I'll be curious to see if they do that tonight.
And I think overall in the NBA, with where the game is at now, if you just watch, even in the regular season, just watch an NBA game and pay attention to where the defense picks up the person who's bringing the ball up. Right? A lot of times, you know, now in the NBA, the defense is just letting you bring the ball up. Nobody's playing, you know, I'm not saying they need to full court press, but pick them up at half court. Like, yeah. Put some pressure on them.
This whole thing where they roll the ball up the floor so the clock doesn't start, I'd be all over that.
Yeah.
All you have to do is take one, two steps towards him. He's going to pick it up.
Yeah.
Don't help him get the ball up the floor.
And when you think about it, at the end of the game, those few seconds could make a difference.
And those tenths of seconds make a difference. So I'm with you on that 100%. I don't know why teams don't do that. I don't. And I think it's because, like, you would never pick up Ben Simmons full court.
Why?
Why would you do that? Because he can't shoot. Right? So in my world, I want better space on Joel Embiid, who dominated the last game. So I want to make sure that I make it more difficult to feed the beast there. So I'm going to work harder on that. I'm going to pick him up at half court. I'm going to pick him up, you know, the first step he takes over the half court line, I'm going to pick him up and make it difficult.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you, after what we saw in game four, I guarantee you Boston's been working on nothing but defensive rotations because they were garbage in game four. I'm telling you that right now.
Yeah.
So you know Boston's working on defensive rotation.
They weren't necessarily the better team for the entire time in game four. I mean, you won on a tip-in. I mean, that's essentially how you won that game.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not as though they came out and, you know, won by a convincing 10 points the way the Rockets
overtime
did.
Tip-in.
You know, yeah, so you went to overtime and you needed a tip-in to win, and that's why I say I do somewhat side with people saying that the Sixers still have a chance in this series. But the Sixers are going to have to execute at a high level.
Straight up the hill, though, man.
Well, I know. I get that. And I know the numbers are against them. Like,
they look tight. They look nervous in the first two games. They were a little better in three, and obviously they won in four.
Yeah.
And so maybe they're coming on as this series goes on. They're finding their sea legs here in the playoffs. I don't know. But it's such an uphill climb. To beat Brad Stevens four games in a row.
I do think that Brett Brown has been outcoached, for sure.
Oh, no question.
Yeah.
No question. So I just think that's really difficult. I think that's asking a whole hell of a lot. So I don't see Philly doing that. I do see a long, protracted Western Conference Finals series.
The NBA Finals.
The NBA Finals between the Rockets and the Warriors. See, this annoys me a little bit, though. And you are a passionate Warriors fan.
Yeah.
I don't believe that this is the NBA Finals. And I know everybody says these are the two best teams, the Rockets and the Warriors, but I think we've seen too much from LeBron. Boston, I'm never going to count Brad Stevens out. But I get why people are saying that. I'm a little burned out on the hype, though. I'm trying to be diplomatic.
Of the Warriors or like the Western
Conference? Of this series.
Because we've
been hearing about this since Christmas.
Totally.
I'm burned out on the hype. This is Yankees Red Sox, but it's encapsulated into like 2 months.
But I don't think we've seen this kind of a matchup before in the last 5 years. We haven't seen a matchup of two teams that are so quick and have so much firepower. And I think that's what's exciting about it. The Yankees Red Sox is great, and I'm burned out on Yankees Red Sox too, by the way. But the reason it's on ESPN so much is because of the history between those two teams. And I think
I think it's on ESPN so much because of the TV markets, the draw. There's a ton of Yankees fans and a ton of Red Sox fans. I don't think Chicago fans give a damn about Red Sox and Yankees. You know, I understand that you might flip that on. We have it on in the background here at Casa de Monte, but that's because we're waiting for game five of the Eastern Conference playoffs, We're waiting for that Philly-Boston game. I'm not going to watch Yankees and Red Sox on the regular. Now, I'm actually a casual observer of the Yankees, but I can't stand the Boston Red Sox. Yeah. Like, if they never win another game, it'll be too soon.
Yeah.
But this Houston Rocket team in particular, there's very little to like from my perspective about
the
Houston Rockets.
They're the team we love to hate, dude.
And I do love hating the Houston Rockets. I don't like the way they play basketball. I don't like the way James Harden plays.
Is it just a Harden thing, or is it a whole, it's the entire team and their brand of ball?
I have a lot of respect for Chris Paul, But even he's becoming annoying with this flopping thing now. You know, it's like
the Joe Ingles thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like Clint Capela waving your finger. Who who are you, Clint Capela?
Yeah.
What have you ever done to wave your finger? Really? You're not like you're Clint Capela, dude. You're on the best team, arguably, in the Western Conference. You had better be blocking shots.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're an afterthought offensively. So you're nothing. What's Clint Capela on the Orlando Magic?
I don't know.
What's he on the Dallas Mavericks? What's he on the Chicago Bulls? Nothing. He's just another guy. He's you know, it's like, come on.
Yeah, I mean,
like, there's so much to dislike about the Rockets.
Yeah, I agree with you that Capela wouldn't be the guy he is without Harden and Chris Paul in that offense. I mean, because I wouldn't say on the Rockets team he's not an afterthought, but on any other team he would be an afterthought.
He is playing with the two best pick and roll players in the NBA.
Yeah.
And James Harden and Chris Paul.
Yeah.
How do you screw that up?
You don't.
And he's also playing with two guys that are elite passers. Like, I mean, it's hard not to contribute if you're Clint Capela.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to be a jerk or a hater or whatever, but it's hard not to contribute if you're Clint Capela. You have to go out of your way to suck.
Yeah.
You know, like, it just, on that team anyway, it whatever. I hope that the Warriors sweep. That's my hope.
I honestly could see it going two different ways. I could see the Warriors winning in five. They're not going to sweep them. I think the Rockets are too good for that. I could see the Warriors winning in five if they really got hot and things went their way. But I could also see it going seven, right? And finishing in Houston.
They're not going to sweep.
No.
This is going to be six or seven. This is going to be a dogfight. It truly will be that old adage you love, that a series doesn't start until somebody loses at home.
Yeah.
That's gonna largely determine how this thing turns out. And if
it goes seven, I think the Rockets win. I don't think the Warriors win if it goes seven.
So are you predicting seven games?
No, what I'm saying is I think six games is very realistic. I think six games is in fact accurate. I think that's what it should go, because that allows the Warriors to lose a couple times, but then to win when they should. You know, I just see that would be a natural path for this series to go. Seven games mean the Warriors made a mistake somewhere.
I can't stand the Rockets. Like, I was sitting here just thinking about this before the show. Like, what am I going to say about I have to find something positive. I have to work hard to find something positive to say about the a-hole Rockets.
Dude, you can be as negative as you want. They're still a fun team to watch. Like, I would, in the regular season, they're still a super fun team to watch. I get the flopping thing. That annoys me, too.
There's
everybody's
the most enjoyable team in the NBA to watch is the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah.
And this whole, like, this Utah series, and a lot of people on Twitter were saying that I'm a Jazz fan. I'm not a Jazz fan. I'm a Bulls fan. And honestly, at this point in my life, I'm a Laker fan. You know, and I don't have any heartburn about saying that. I'm a Laker fan. That's a team that you know, I covered. I watched the Kobe and Shaq years in person. Like, I'm a Laker fan. So both of my teams suck. So it has nothing to do with, you know, animosity or it has nothing to do with the fact that I'm a Jazz fan. I can't stand watching guys like James Harden play that kind of basketball when it's completely unnecessary. Why do it? Why? When PJ Tucker is not the biggest a-hole on your team, you've got a real a-hole on your team.
Yeah.
And that, to me, that speaks volumes about... Think about that. P.J. Tucker's not a nice guy.
No.
And I dislike James Harden way more than I dislike P.J. Tucker now.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this is kind of interesting, because I don't dislike Harden as much as you do. I dislike the fact that he's not beating you by playing better basketball. What he's doing is he's trying to find a loophole in the system to beat you. And he's trying to rack up fouls. He's trying to beat you in longevity.
But I don't hate James Harden.
No, not the person. No, the player.
I hate the flopping component of him.
Yeah.
I love watching him drop step backs on people.
Yeah.
Because it is really hard to do. I play a ton of basketball. It's really hard to do. I love that about him. I hate the flopping.
Yeah.
I hate the constant whining and complaining and politicking to the referee. I cannot stand
it. I mean, I think the moments of greatness out of James Harden outshine the flopping and stuff like that. And I think we saw so much flopping in the Jazz series because the Jazz are a physical team. I mean, that's what he had to resort to beat them and get in their head.
Yeah. I don't know, man. It's one of those things that James Harden just makes me nuts. Anyway, I think the Warriors will win this series. And I think a lot of it is the mouth gum flapping that's been going on from Houston. You know, Capella saying that they want the Warriors. And Draymond Green made a great point. He's like, yeah, we want to win the championship. It doesn't matter who we have to go through. You know, that's my thing.
and that encompasses just why I'm a Warriors fan right there. Because
yeah.
I've been following KD for a long time, since Texas, like since the Sonic days, like all of it. And he's here now. And yeah. now they're at a point where they're not worried about the Rockets. They're worried about the big picture.
They're worried about winning a championship.
I love that. I love the fact that KD wants to see LeBron in the finals and get another chance.
On Periscope, question is, what are the X factors for both teams in the Rockets-Warriors series? And sorry, I missed your name there. Follow us on Twitter, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. We broadcast this show live every day on Periscope, which is live streaming video on Twitter. And you can submit your questions. We love talking to our listeners. Rockets, Warriors, X-Factors. Here's what my notes on this series are. Chris Paul versus the Warriors. Because I think Klay Thompson can handle James Harden, as well as anybody's going to handle James Harden
He's
one-on-one.
He's always going to get his.
But here's my point. Can your boy, Steph Curry, handle Chris Paul one-on-one? Now, defensively, Chris Paul will struggle in that matchup, and we've seen that. Like, Steph Curry's dropped Chris Paul multiple times, right?
Yep.
My thing is, Chris Paul is playing the best mid-range game in the NBA right now today. That jumper.
Is he better than Curry right now? It's a tough question.
Ooh, little breaking news out of the NBA. Paul George, left knee surgery. He had his left knee scoped, and they're calling it successful.
Sweet.
Does that make you nervous at all?
No.
No, I don't. Probably not.
Yeah, I could care. I don't care. I mean, I think he's a full-time athlete. He'll be fine.
Can Steph Curry handle Chris Paul defensively? Can Steph check Chris Paul?
Yeah, I think he can. I think this Pelican series got Steph his legs back, and I'm really hoping, and I don't know this to be true, but my hope is that Steph is in shape now, that he is good to go, like feeling good, feeling confident, feeling strong.
What, he played 37 minutes in the entire fourth quarter?
But that's what I'm saying. So I'm hoping that wasn't just that one game. I'm hoping now he's ramped up properly. Because remember, everybody was wondering, how long are they going to hold Steph out? Like, how long is too long, and what's the right time to bring him back?
Well, I look at the Warriors, and here's my question. Who does Draymond Green get in this series?
Clint Capella.
I think he gets Clint Capella.
And I hope he does, too, because if you can shut down Anthony Davis, you can damn sure shut down Clint Capella. I'm not saying that Clint Capella is going to be a zero in this series, because he's obviously not. They're going to pick and roll the Warriors to death.
I would agree.
But Draymond's ability to get in guys' head, to be physical, I mean, that is, Draymond Green encompasses everything that Rudy Gobert is not. And I would say that Rudy Gobert is not physical in the way that Draymond Green is. And Draymond just has this uniqueness about him where he just gets under your skin. And
he
I don't
does.
Know what
he
does, but it's effective.
Well, I think the other part of this series that's interesting is the Kevin Durant component, because Trevor Ariza didn't play a ton of minutes. He's a guy that they've been really working minutes carefully on. Like, he played 25 minutes the other night, I think it was.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be a vital part because he's the guy that's got length, enough length to make things difficult for Kevin Durant. And then I wonder, how do you work Eric Gordon into this? So I think D'Antoni's rotation, the way he fits in, Bamute, I think, is important. You know, obviously, you're going to have to figure out Gordon, Green, you know, how much are you playing PJ Tucker? I think that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of matchups, and I think almost all of them favor the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah.
Like we talked about with Philly and Boston a few minutes ago, I think the matchups all favor Philly, and Boston is winning that series, I think. But if you look at the Rockets and Warriors, I think all the matchups favor the Warriors.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you outside of Harden. I think Harden has the ability to kind of go to another level and hit big shots and have big games, right? Like, and I think this is you're the guy who says that Kevin Durant isn't on LeBron's level when it comes to the biggest moments in performing and being the guy on a team. And to that I say this is the first opportunity in the playoffs to do that for him. This is a big series against one of the best players in the NBA, and they're going to go back and forth.
Do you think, in another Periscope question from Al in the 214, I didn't see his whole name, sorry, yeah. Al in the 214, do you think the Rockets have to win the first two games to win the series?
Yeah,
100%. I don't think there's any question.
There's no doubt about it. If you drop one of those first two games and the Warriors win both games at Oracle, you're in big trouble. Big trouble, man. I mean,
yeah, you don't want to go to Oakland 1-1.
No.
Certainly you can't go 0-2. But if you go to Oakland and you're 1-1, I mean, that almost makes game 3 a must win. Like
the Rockets capable of winning at Oracle?
Oh yeah. I mean, can they? Yeah. But I think it's all about how that game starts, because what we've seen from the Warriors is hot start, domination. Ah, they faded a little bit. Oh, we faded a little bit. Boom, gone. Like we in the Pelican series, yeah. That's what we saw. Like they had their downtime, but nah, no problem. We'll just do what. Oh, Steph is struggling here. Let me get it to KD.
Yeah.
You know, like they had no problem adjusting on the fly, which has really been the story of the Warriors since KD got there. But you have to win the first two. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Yeah, I don't know what else you say. I mean, obviously those are must-win games, but the Warriors are either going to dominate this team or they're going to struggle with the flexibility of the Rockets, because they really haven't played another team that has the flexibility that they already possess themselves, right? Like the Pelicans don't have the flexibility that the Warriors have. The Warriors can play several different brands of basketball.
Yep.
You know, they can you know, play transition basketball, half court, like they can play outside,
if
inside.
The Pelicans aren't playing with their hair on fire, I think it's a real struggle for them to play well.
Yeah, and so I thought we saw in the Utah series with the Rockets that the Rockets were forced to play a lot of half court basketball, and they still won that game.
It's interesting. Bobby on Periscope says they won't win the first two and they won't win the games in Oakland. That they're going to split both there and in Houston.
Well, that would definitely be interesting. I mean,
that would turn that series into a
three-game series.
Yeah.
So,
which would be, I don't think
TV ratings, bro.
I just don't. Yeah. That's why I said I think this is a 6 or 7-game series. I think the Warriors are winning this series, and I think it's a 6 or 7. I mean, hell, let's just say it's a 7-game series. You know, I don't know. I'll go out on a limb and say it'll be a 6-game Warriors win.
Yeah, I'm with you on that as well. But I do think that the Warriors are capable of winning one in Houston. I don't think Houston's going to win one in Oakland. I don't see that happening.
Boy, the Capella matchup's going to be huge. It's going to be really, really important. By the way, how funny was it that at the end of this series, Rajon Rondo had to sit with a groin injury after all the talking and all of the, you know, trying to trip Draymond Green and trying to get in his head and couldn't play in the fourth quarter, had a groin injury. So sad. See you later, Rajon.
Have a nice life.
Find us on Twitter, The Monty Show. Find us online, themontyshow.com. Before we move on, what do you make of this Shaq and Charles Barkley fight last night? If you didn't see it, on TNT last night, they were talking about the Toronto Raptors. And the fact that the Raptors benched DeMar DeRozan, which you and I both passionately disagreed with.
Yeah.
I think you got to leave DeMar out there. He's the home run hitter that's 0 for his last 50.
Yeah.
The next swing the ball could go out of the park. You got to have DeMar on the floor.
Yeah.
But it was fascinating to listen to these two guys go back and forth. This is from TNT last night, Charles Barkley and Shaquille O'Neal.
To repair his relationship with DeMar DeRozan.
No, he don't.
Yes, he does.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah, you have to, because listen, if your best player, you bench your best player.
Why was he benched?
That's not the point.
It is the point.
You don't disrespect your best player. Listen. If you don't have a great relationship with your best player, you're never going to win.
That's not true.
He did not.
That's not true.
He did not, well, in your opinion.
Wait, just now it's turned up. Here we go.
That's not true.
It's not true.
Me and Pat Riley never saw eye to eye and what happened to my man win. So it's not true what you're saying. It's not true what you're saying.
It's not true.
I'm just letting you know what you
did. What's the man on that team?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I was a role player anyway. But you know what?
That's my point. That's my point.
Say, me and them didn't get along.
With your best player.
You don't know what you're talking about when it comes to championships.
That champion. No matter how much you scream, you loud, listen, that does not listen, make you right. Listen. You're wrong in the city.
You can, and that's why you ain't winning because you was a baby. Stop babying these players.
I'm not babying no
players. He don't play. He don't play. He got to sit his ass down.
He got to repair.
He ain't got to repair nothing. He got to stop babying the players. You got baby. That's why you ain't win.
Dwayne Wade and Kobe Bryant carried me up and down the court.
So why you don't because I got three finals MVP, Chuck.
Because you
Google me, Chuck. You see that?
Oh, my goodness. That's ugly. Google me, Chuck. First of all, did Kobe and Wade, quote unquote, carry his ass up and down the floor?
No.
I covered the Lakers during the Kobe and Shaq years, and I'm telling you, Shaq was the most dominant player. Almost without question.
You can make a case he's the most dominant big man that's ever played in the NBA. I mean, maybe the stats don't necessarily back that up, but I'm just talking about pure physical domination on the floor.
Yes.
There was not anybody who did what Shaq was able to do.
You know, and people are asking if TNT will get rid of them. No.
No.
Charles Barkley's iconic, and Shaquille O'Neal's done a good job.
That's great TV, bro.
Yeah, and the thing I think that's so good about it is Shaq can actually say to Charles Barkley, look, man, you didn't win a championship, you don't get it. And that's absolutely true. And right there, you heard Shaq saying, well, I've got three finals MVP awards. Nobody carried me up and down the floor.
Yeah.
DeMar DeRozan specifically, though, this is an interesting conversation. I think DeMar DeRozan earned his benching. But I don't think you can bench him because you don't have anybody else, Van Vliet or whoever you want to put out there.
Dude, he's the Kobe of their team, right? Like, yeah. DeMar DeRozan fills the I'm the best player on your team role for the Raptors. And when he sucks, the team sucks. When he's really good, the team's really good.
Yes.
The problem is he sucked for most of the playoffs.
Yes, he did.
And I don't know if we've talked about this at length, and I'll just say what I said before. I feel like, and I got the sense based on watching his play, that he was rattled, man. And I don't know how else you explain that. LeBron was in his head.
Yeah. I don't know how you explain it. Because DeMar DeRozan's a much better basketball player than we saw. And to end your series and your season on a flagrant two,
by the way, not sure that was a flagrant two. I get he hit him in the face. I get it he didn't go after the ball. But a flagrant two in the playoffs is a bit excessive.
Well, by definition, it is a flagrant two.
Yeah, but it's the playoffs, dude.
Excessive, unnecessary physical violence that caused injury? Yeah, I think that's a flagrant two. But here's the question. A lot of people are blaming Dwayne Casey for their sweep and saying that he mismanaged it. He got badly outcoached by, of all people, Tyronn Lue.
No, he didn't get outcoached by Tyronn Lue. He got outcoached by LeBron James.
Okay.
I'm being serious, though. I'm being serious.
But I think Tyronn Lue made very good adjustments.
Maybe he did. Maybe he didn't. What I'm saying is LeBron James can only play against what's in front of him. And Tyronn Lue may have told the team what to do, but at the end of the day, that's LeBron James' team on the floor. I mean, it is literally him and everybody else. And most people are saying that this is the worst support cast.
Well, I agree with that,
had.
But here's the problem for Dwayne Casey. This is not a one-year issue. This is a multi-year disappointment. When you have two guys that are making $31 million and $28 million, and you're getting swept again... Like, I think Dwayne Casey's
fault.
Yes. Yes. When you have two superstar caliber players and you have the best team in the Eastern Conference, you cannot get swept.
But how much is the part about them being the best in the Eastern Conference a little bit flawed based on the fact that the Cavs were just such a dumpster fire for most of the year?
Well, I think the problem is that they didn't force the ball out of LeBron's hands. They were not prepared for LeBron James to take that shot.
Yeah.
And I just don't understand.
I don't know how you let him walk up the floor. And I think pretty much
unmolested,
uncontested,
like over the
undisputed.
Timeline, right down the. I don't know how you let that happen.
Yeah.
You know, the problem is they were so scared to foul LeBron there because they didn't want him shooting free throws. You know, I don't know. I'm a talk show host. I'm a talk show host. I'm not a basketball coach. I would not have let LeBron James beat me.
Dude, I would have fouled him. And I would have fouled him early.
I would have rather have seen guys foul out on LeBron James than let him hit turnaround fadeaways from behind the backboard that was a travel.
Come on, dude. That
but
was blatant.
You can't overcome when a player is soft. That's an excellent point from Periscope. They needed PJ Tucker back on that team. They needed a ball buster on that team. They need Lance Stevenson. That's who they needed. Somebody who's not scared to foul LeBron and foul him hard. Somebody who's not scared to go after him. Because LeBron, let's be honest, we're talking about DeMar DeRozan being soft. LeBron James isn't exactly the Rock mentally.
Yeah.
You can get in that guy's head.
Yeah.
And I don't think Dwayne Casey had a strategy for the last 5 seconds of a game and LeBron's got the ball. You have to have gone over that. And they
clearly
didn't.
They weren't prepared.
They didn't.
And I agree with you on that. And that part of the conversation is Dwayne Casey's fault. But getting swept is not all his fault. I would say he shares maybe like half of the blame.
It's never the player's fault because you're not firing the players.
Well, I get it, but I'm not going to subscribe to the idea that it's all the coach's fault.
But do you realize how untradeable most of that roster is?
Yeah, I get that it's untradeable.
DeMar, you could probably get some picks back for DeMar. You could get assets back. You're not going to blow that up. They just won the Eastern Conference. You're not blowing that up.
Then maybe they get a new coach, and we're talking about them failing again next year, and we can talk about
Bro, you win 50 games, that's doing something in the NBA. Anything over 50? Oh, yeah.
Even in the Eastern Conference.
What did they do? How many games did they – didn't they win 60 games?
They won a lot of games. Look, I'm not saying they're a bad team. What I'm saying is that, their team, their roster is largely untradeable. You're right, because of the money, because of the age.
And Valachunas is a 1980s big man. He's not Anthony Davis. He's not a guy who can defend on multiple levels.
But would you say there are guys like Anthony Davis? Is it unfair?
Jesus, they were 59-23. That's not
in the East.
You know and there's something to that. The East didn't have a 60-win team.
The East was
Would have been good for second place in the West.
Listen, I'm not trying to discount what the Raptors did, but what I am saying, I'm discounting the Eastern Conference. That conference was garbage for most of the year, and LeBron and company have had a turnaround and a rejuvenation. In the West, to win 60 games would just be
ludicrous.
They
won 34-7 at home.
Yeah.
Periscope makes a good point. That's the best home record in the NBA. Like, look, man. You can't get swept. I don't care who you are.
I'm just telling you.
You have a team in Cleveland that had a player refuse to enter the game, and that team swept you. You have a team that hasn't known each other but for a month and a half, and
there's
that team swept you. That team swept you. And the problem is that when you look at the regular season, sure, we can run up and down and throw alley-oops and shoot from half court, and we can do all that. Not in the postseason, you can't. And I think... Again, I think Dwayne Casey's the guy that needs to fall on the axe here. I don't know who you hire, but I said yesterday, I think you got to go hire somebody. I need somebody to walk up to DeMar DeRozan and grab him by the nuts and say, hey.
Wake up, bro.
Do you have a pair?
Yeah.
Like, show me something. Show me that you want to. Like, does DeMar DeRozan. This is probably way too much, but whatever.
Never.
Does DeMar DeRozan want to be the best player in the world?
I think he will say that. I think. It's interesting. DeMar's season was really interesting, and I want to be careful here, but when he wrote that piece about depression and several players came out with him, that kind of changed how I looked at DeMar, because a lot of players struggle with that but don't come out with it, right? So he came out with it, and so I thought to myself, okay, now you've come out with this. Maybe he's right now. Maybe this will be the freedom he needs, right? Like, he was able to express himself, like, he's free of it.
He wasn't hiding it
anymore.
Yeah,
like, he didn't have that weight anymore, so maybe he's going to come out and light it up. That didn't happen. So now I'm left wondering, okay, well, who is this guy then? Because he's not a killer, right? Like, he's not a killer.
Not a killer.
He's not that guy, and Kyle Lowry is just not capable of killing people. So I don't know what they're going to do to win, and that's why I say, like, this team, it's DeMar. If DeMar is winning, the team is winning. If they're not, they're not. Like, LeBron James beat them. LeBron James was handling the ball the whole series, initiating the offense the whole series. Like, it wasn't Tyronn Lue.
How did you go six games against Washington? You know, like, I think there's a lot here.
They're just not great.
I think there's a lot here that has to do with poor coaching. You know, you got swept by a team. And talk about six games. Indiana had LeBron and the Cavs on the ropes. The Pacers, in a lot of times, had them on the ropes. They won 59 games. Periscope's exactly right. They won 59 games. You're not blowing that thing up. You got a double-double guy in Valachunas. You've got an aging point guard in Lowry. And you've got what's supposed to be a superstar. Somebody has got to get to DeMar DeRozan and say, hey, bro, if you're our best player, Do you want to be the best player in the world? Because if you don't, we need to move on. Right? Like, that's the whole nine. Why are you going to get Paul George? Because I guarantee you, Paul George will passionately tell you, I want to be the best player in the world. He will absolutely tell you that. LeBron says it all the time. Flipping LeBron James's kid says he wants to be better than his old man.
Yeah.
Like, that's...
And there's
that's,
a real chance he could do that.
That's motivation. That's motivation. Well, you know, everybody's pissed at KD still for going to Golden State. Why did he do that? Because he wanted to win rings. And now we've got DeMar DeRozan getting benched in the penultimate game that's going to define your offseason. Like, I have no tolerance for that, man. It's like, we're talking about the Padres here in a minute. Like, I have no tolerance for guys that don't have fortitude. I'm paying you millions of dollars not to be a dick. Get out there and perform, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, let's go. Yeah. This whining and complaining, James Harden can do that. DeMar DeRozan cannot. Because now you know what DeMar DeRozan's going to spend the next season doing. Proving that this sweep and his performance in that Cavs series was a fluke. If I'm DeMar DeRozan, I'm doing everything I can to get LeBron James to Los Angeles. Get the hell out of here. Because I want to win the Eastern Conference. Right? Like, and this whole thing about, well, I want to beat, to be the best, we need to beat the best. No, hell no. To be the best, you need to win a championship. And I'm willing to take the flattest, straightest road to the frickin' championship.
Because that's all that matters.
Yeah, that's what I'm willing
to
do.
All that matters. Those seven games are all that matter. And tell the Padres story, because that Padres story is actually runs parallel with DeMar DeRozan's benching.
Okay, so there's a story going on around the Padres, right? And this is all of sports. Like, this is a really important thing. Now, here's part of the problem with the Padres. Part of the problem is that this story is from Reddit. Our good friends at the Mighty 1090 in San Diego, Ben Higgins, who does Ben and Woods in the Morning, tweeted out a link to a Reddit story today from a fan who went to Mexico with the Padres. Because you remember, the Padres just played the Dodgers in Monterrey, Mexico. So apparently, Brian Mitchell, the pitcher, who came over in the Yankee trade, Brian Mitchell goes to the Padres and he's sucked out loud, right? He has not been a good pitcher, right? So Mitchell comes off the field after getting rocked again and screamed at somebody in the dugout tunnel. Now, this is from Reddit, and the Reddit is written by a fan who says he was sitting right next to the Padre dugout in Monterey. Mitchell came off the field, screamed at someone in the tunnel, and then came back and yelled at Andy Green. He said, and I quote, Mitchell to his manager, Andy Green, said, quote, just let me effing pitch. Your effing way isn't effing working. Let me effing pitch. See, I love that. If I'm managing Brian Mitchell, I love that. I want that. I need that. Because let's be honest, right? The San Diego Padres are not in a position where they're winning right now. They are in a transition. They're in the process.
Yes.
So you want guys who hate losing. And if it was just Mitchell, if that's all it was, I'd be like, okay, you know what? This is a young guy. This is a guy who was a Yankee, and now he's a Padre, and he's really been struggling, right? So, okay, I can kind of understand this. But there's also news on Eric Hosmer, the highest paid player in the history of the San Diego Padres. Off the field he came. Eric Hosmer, after hitting a home run, Hosmer said to Andy Green, quote, am I earning my paycheck now, Chief? Before running past Green and celebrating with his teammates. Boy, that's a problem. That's a problem.
Yeah.
And when you have issues like this with the Padres, and you're a bad team, when you have issues like this with DeMar DeRozan, and you're a good team, it's the same thing. The player goes or the coach goes. In Toronto, you're not getting rid of DeMar DeRozan.
No.
So Dwayne Casey's got to go. In this case, in San Diego, you're going to get rid of Andy Green and Matt Stairs, the hitting coach, by the way, because frankly, they're too talented not to be hitting.
Yeah.
They're going to have some the San Diego Padres are going to have some issues with pitching. They're young, like Lucchesi goes tonight. He's been fantastic. Lauer's been fantastic for them.
Yeah.
After that one rough start, Lauer's been really good. Mitchell's been terrible every time out. And it's showing. And what's showing here is he doesn't have a relationship with his manager. So does DeMar DeRozan have a relationship with Dwayne Casey? I don't know. He benched him. But DeMar's not the guy who's going to sit at a table and whine and complain about it. He's going to internalize that. And it's going to be for everybody else to determine if Dwayne Casey was at fault.
Yeah.
You know, I don't believe, in my opinion, I don't believe you can bench DeMar DeRozan. It was a terrible decision. I don't care how bad he was.
It's a mistake. It looks bad. It is bad. It's the wrong thing to do.
But let's talk about the Padres. If you're Andy Green, he gets blown up in Monterey, what would you have done with Mitchell knowing how bad he's been? See, for me, I'd have sent him down because I got other arms at AAA that I need to look at. But that's not what the Padres did. The Padres put Mitchell in the bullpen.
And I agree with that. I'm on their side because I think if this guy is going to be a guy that you want around for a long time, sending him down, in my opinion, as a pitcher, doesn't do you any good because you're facing lesser talent.
Dude, he's got a 6.47
right.
ERA.
And that as a starter. And that's why he needs to go to the bullpen because he needs to, and this is the Patrick Corbin theory of life before he figured it out this year. He needs to go to the bullpen. He needs to throw one inning at a time. And every single day, the guy needs to perfect his mechanics and get locked in mentally.
16 walks, 26 strikeouts.
And he knows those stats, and that's a problem going out to start because what is he thinking every time he goes out to start? Don't walk this guy, and then he walks him, right? So don't walk this guy, but then he goes out, he walks the guy, and he's like, here we go.
Why did you send Schwarber to AAA last year then?
Because I think you need reps as a hitter. As a hitter, you need reps. You need to be able to see the ball. You need to be able to hit the ball. You need to be able to get a lot of at-bats.
So when Mitchell comes out of the bullpen, and I guess that'd be tonight,
mm-hmm.
and he gets rocked again. Because his last couple of starts, 2 1/3, 3 earned. 4 2/3, 4
earned.
But
he's not gonna get to that point in the bullpen. I highly doubt Andy Green would let him get to a point where he's giving up 4 earned in 1 inning as a reliever.
Right, but I think that's the problem. You're saying that there was pressure on him not to walk guys.
No, I'm saying he internalized the pressure. I'm saying he knows the stats. He knows that his lack of command is a problem, and he knows that taking the ball every fifth day.
Yeah. Well, listen, I think they should have sent him down because he's a quality arm. He's got to learn to throw strikes. That's Mitchell's problem. He throws way too many balls, and he doesn't have a dominant pitch. Go and learn one. Go learn a slider. Go learn a changeup. Go learn a sinker. I don't care. Go learn a screwball. Whatever you feel like. Just go learn something and come back to us a better pitcher. You've got 2 years to figure it out in San Diego. You're going to put it, and this is my bigger problem. Putting him in the bullpen means you're going to need him down the stretch. You don't need anybody down the stretch in San Diego. You need guys to develop, grow, and learn. Send him to AAA to develop, grow, and learn. And then bring me a younger arm. Bring me somebody like this Urias situation. They have this second baseman who's ready to go. And Asuaje has been terrible, right? Like Asuaje has not been good. I think we all can get on board with that. The guy can't. I think he's under 200 hitting. Like he's not been good. But Urias is raking now. And the question is, are you just waiting to fire Matt Stairs so you don't subject Urias to Matt Stairs? Because I can't think of another reason not to bring him up right now.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, clearly there's a reason that we don't know. I mean, it doesn't make sense on the surface not to bring him up. But I think maybe that's good thinking on your part. Maybe they know they're going to fire both Andy Green and Matt Stairs, and then when the new regime comes in, they're going to bring their boys up.
Would you fire Matt? Would you fire?
I'd fire both of them.
Andy Green.
Yeah, I'd fire both of them.
Because
I think at this point, you're not in a position to deal with BS from your manager. And by the way, he's a young manager. We're not talking about an old school manager here, right? That's like too much of a hard ass and the players need a more relaxed guy.
Nope.
We've got a guy who's too relaxed and then is too hardcore in the wrong moment. And so he rubs guys the wrong way. And by the way, you just signed Eric Hosmer. I think, you know, his relationship with Eric Hosmer should be good, and it's not.
Well, I think Hosmer's fine. The Mitchell thing is clearly, and by the way, Kevin Acey at the Tribune wrote about the Mitchell argument. So what that tells me is they're trying too hard with Mitchell, and you just need to kind of clear his head. But Luis Urias, I think you need to bring him up.
Yeah.
There's no reason not to bring Urias
up. Dude, all your best prospects should be in the big leagues. That's where you're at as an organization, right? Like, we listen to
and he's raking, man.
Listen, we listen to a lot of San Diego radio, and the sentiment I hear from everybody is, well, they're not winning. They're not winning. They're losing a lot. It's not about winning and losing right now. It is about developing guys like Urias, right? Like, it's about developing, you know, your Margots and your Lowers and guys like Mitchell. Like, it's about developing these guys.
Luis Urias is supposed to be your second baseman for a decade. That's the kind of talent he is. And I he's 20 years old, so it's not that you're in a hurry, but at this point, he's shown you he's on base 429 at AAA for El Paso. Like, bring the guy up. Asuaye is hitting under 200. 194. This guy's 301, 429 on base. Hell, he's even got an OPS of 875. I mean, there's no reason not to bring this gap. Anyway, here nor there. The point is, I think you have to make a change because at some point, and this is again, this might be the Dwayne Casey conversation. At some point, it becomes detrimental to the ball club. When you keep running out guys or running out a lineup that's just not good enough, when you keep playing Asuaye at second base, knowing that he can't hit the weight of his jockstrap, there's no reason to do that.
Yeah.
But you keep forcing that.
I mean, and it demoralizes guys like Hosmer. It frustrates them.
What do you say about Matt Kemp? Now, Matt Kemp is raking for the Dodgers.
And this comes after a time when he just wasn't very good.
And supposedly you were out of shape, Matt Kemp. You were fat in San Diego. He got in shape. He left San Diego, went to L.A., got in shape, and is their best hitter. And why is that? Because the culture's not there in San Diego with Andy Green.
Yeah.
And I think that's a huge problem. I don't know the immediate guy that you hire for that gig.
There's somebody out there.
I'm sure they know where they would go there. I don't know what I would do, but I would get guys, a coaching staff. I would let Matt Stairs go, and I would do everything I could do to have, you know, just call Barry Bonds. Call somebody who's a proven hitting coach. Like, for everything that Barry Bonds was and was not, there's no doubt that Barry Bonds makes guys good hitters, right? Like, he's controversial. Barry Bonds is going to bring that milkshake to the yard, though.
I mean,
his guys are going to hit.
Listen, you can say what you want about Barry Bonds, but the guy did hit. I mean, maybe he cheated and whatever, but listen, the guy mentally was always ready to hit.
What he did as a player almost doesn't matter now, right? It doesn't matter.
Well, I think what does matter about his playing days is that it comes into his ability to coach, right? Like, his ability to talk to a young player about, here's your approach. This is what you need to be paying attention to when you're sitting on the bench and you're five at-bats away from hitting. Right, you need to be watching these little details and
absolutely.
Understanding. I mean, those are the things that Barry Bonds pulls from his playing days that you can't replicate with Jimmy off the street, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, the average player isn't a great coach for a reason.
No, but I need a Kevin Long.
Yeah.
I need a guy, a Chili Davis, a Barry Bonds. I need Tony Gwynn. Happy birthday, Tony Gwynn, by the way. Today would have been his birthday. I need a Tony Gwynn.
Yeah.
I need a guy that it's why I love that the Dodgers have Mark Pryor as their bullpen coach. Because he's been there and he's done that. And when I say to Luis Urias, hey, who's Barry Bonds? He's that's my hitting coach. Like, you're going to listen to him.
Yeah.
Eric Hosmer's going to listen to Barry Bonds, right? There was a great story, again, on Ben and Woods this morning about. And I think it was Woodsy. I can't remember. But they were talking about hitting Tony Gwynn hitting off of a tee on the inside corner. And like, Tony Gwynn was trying to get people to hit off the inside corner of the plate. So he put a tee way inside. And it was really awkward to try and hit off that tee. But Tony Gwynn could do it no problem because that's how good Tony Gwynn was.
Yeah.
And everybody knows who Tony Gwynn was, rest his soul. Everybody knows who Barry Bonds is. Everybody knows what Mark McGwire did. You know, and that's why I'm saying somebody who's got balls, somebody who is unquestionably the man, needs to get to those guys. And the thing that kills me is Mark McGwire's the bench coach there. Right? Like, if I'm firing Andy Green, which I advocate for, by the way, because I just it's broken,
yeah,
in my opinion. If I'm firing Andy Green and Matt Stairs, who's a great dude, I love Matt Stairs, Mark McGwire should be my hitting coach. And hell, I would give Mark McGwire a chance to be the manager of that team, because Mark McGwire is going to be a manager somewhere someday.
Yeah.
That's going to happen. I would give him that chance. You know, I don't know, is Darren Balsley the guy as a pitching coach? I have no idea. But this team right now is getting performances out of Lauer and Lucchesi, who we'll see tonight. Like, they're getting performances out of those guys, but they're not hitting. Asuahe's 194. Send him out.
Yeah.
Give me Urias.
Well, and part of that process is accountability, right?
Yeah.
If you keep a guy up who's hitting 194, there's no accountability.
Yeah. And I look at, like, Skip Schumacher. I love Skip Schumacher. He's their first base coach. I know Skip intimately well from our time together in St. Louis. Skip is a disciple of Mark McGwire's. Skip Schumacher, when he was in St. Louis, used to go out to Southern California and spend time with Mark in the offseason, and it made him a better player.
How does it not?
How does it not?
How does it not?
Right? Like, so those two together. But right now, are you telling me that Matt Stairs, like, Matt Stairs is not a better hitting coach than Mark McGwire?
Matt Stairs doesn't have the freaking swagger that Mark McGwire or Barry Bonds has.
I'm curious what that dynamic is like. What's the relationship of a guy like a Mark McGwire and a Matt Stairs? Is Mark McGwire saying to Matt Stairs, hey, because as a bench coach, you're the hand of the king, right? Like,
yeah,
you are the right-hand guy.
Dude. Yeah.
Is Mark McGwire working with Matt Stairs? Is Mark McGwire working with an Eric Hosmer?
Well, I think you're right on. What is the relationship between the manager, Andy Green, the bench coach, Mark McGwire, and the hitting coach, and Matt Stairs? Those three guys really control the success of your ball club. And those conversations, because let's be honest, it's not about what they do in the dugout, right? Like, that's not the whole picture here. That's just what we see. It's behind the scenes in Andy Green's office when we're talking about, well, you know, Swae's hitting 194. Well, he's giving us good defense. Yeah, but he's not hitting Andy.
Correct.
We need to send him down.
Yeah.
And Andy Green's not listening. And I'm not saying Mark McGwire or Matt Stairs
have
said that.
Well, and Prowler plays a role in that. So you got to remember the general manager. And I've seen this everywhere. I've seen this in San Francisco when I was with the Cubs. Ed Lynch used to be involved. Everywhere I've been.
Yeah.
In San Francisco, certainly Brian Sabian. There were many times. Like, I remember Brian Wilson, the closer of the Giants, tore his UCL.
Gnar.
I was in the clubhouse in Bruce Bochy's office listening to them talk about it. And then we all go in there, and Brian Sabian walks out, and Boch doesn't say anything about it. So I said to him, hey, is there an update on Brian Wilson? And they said, yeah, he's done for the year. He tore his ligament in his elbow. So they're always talking. Like, to be a really good baseball team, it's the Theo Epstein, Jed Hoyer. Like, that's the guy that's the blueprint. Like, Theo Epstein is involved with his manager. Jed Hoyer's involved with Joe Maddon. They're talking strategy. Hey, what did you, you know, like, hey, you know, Andy, let's talk about this fight you had with Brian Mitchell. What, tell me what you saw there. How do you want to handle this? What are your thoughts on it? Are you upset with him? Are you done with him? Are you frustrated? Like, you need to be able to have that. And the other thing about Andy Green, and this is every great head coach.
Yeah.
You have to be able to put guys around you who are a better than you at what you're doing.
Yeah.
Okay, like Andy Green and really Matt Stairs. Matt Stairs needs to understand that Mark McGwire is a better hitting coach than he is. Hey, let's work together to make this an offensive juggernaut. Let's work together to make sure, you know, that Villanueva wins the Rookie of the Year and he's consistent all year long. Hey, Skip, let's make sure we don't burn out Villanueva. Let's make sure that we give him 2 days every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, like the... like, that's the Buster Posey conversation in San Francisco. Or, like, let's make sure he doesn't get burned out. Because I know that Eric Hosmer is going to play every day, and he's going to tell me he wants to play every single day.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I know that Hosmer and Galvis, those are my veterans. You know, like, I know A.J. Ellis now, because we got Hedges on the disabled list. I know that, A.J., but he's a little older now. Like, those are the kind of conversations that are the glue to baseball teams. And I don't think those conversations are happening in San Diego. And if they are,
they're not happening the way they should.
Well, then torch the whole effing staff because it's not working. Like, if you're the San Diego Padres and you're having these conversations and they're not working,
yeah,
that's my point. The Cubs won today, by the way.
Are you happy?
I'm trying, and listen, Linda, listen. I'm trying to be level-headed.
Mm-hmm.
Because you said something that I had been thinking. Is it the Cubs or is it the Marlins? Because they have raked against the Marlins. Like, Anthony Rizzo has broken out of his slump against the Marlins.
Right, and this is what they needed, right?
Is it the Cubs or is it the Marlins?
I think it is the Marlins pitching. I mean, because their pitching is not very good. But either way, it doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things because now the Cubs are hitting. And you hope that when they face better pitching, they continue to hit, and they continue to see the fastball hit the fastball, which is what they've been doing.
And by the way.
Yeah.
By the way, Addison Russell lifted weights this morning.
No.
Because he hit a home run today.
Dude, he ate his Wheaties.
He hit a home run today. I'm just saying. Cubs won. Is this where they hit the gas and they take a 10-game lead at the All-Star break?
Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe. We'll see. Your boys are in Philadelphia, the Giants. That division, I'm telling you, the NL West is still wide open, man.
I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying that you can't. It's the Diamondbacks division to lose at this point.
Yes, it is. Yes, you know? It is.
It is.
Before we go.
Yeah.
Because how long do you think this show's been today?
It's you asked me this every day. We're about an hour now.
Yeah, an hour and 1 minute. I'm going to do a 24-hour fast over the weekend. I'm not sure
this weekend?
I think so.
Dude, come on, bro.
Why?
Why's it got to be this weekend? We need more. We need more Fortnite and more contemplation.
Right, but that doesn't require me to be a fat ass the entire time. And I kind of feel like I've been a fat ass since I got back from Dublin. Like, I walked 30 miles in 6 days in Dublin.
Mm-hmm.
It was awesome. But yeah. I'm going to do a 24-hour fast. I am only going to drink water.
Is Mrs. Monty doing it with you?
I'm going to try. She's not aware of this yet. She is not aware of this yet.
Okay.
So it's going to be a 24-hour fast. Ugh. Do you think I can do it?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can. I think it would be tough, like, if you were the only one doing it, I think it'd be a lot harder. If the three of us did it, I think it'd probably be a little easier, but still.
Okay. I'm going to do nothing but drink water and
Thanos.
Probably amino energy. But it's got to be 5 calories or less per beverage. So that means Monster and Rockstar are out. Monster and Rockstar are out. So there you have it. Anyway. That's it. Show's over, Jake. You gonna play the music or what? Maybe. Hey, there it is. Hey, music. Good to hear from you. We'll see you tomorrow. Make sure you find us on Twitter, The Monty Show. MONTY, The Monty Show. Make sure you find us on SoundCloud, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, your mom's phone. You know, it's just anywhere that we're going to be is where you should be. And I'll stop. Say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake.